How many downloads of Jim and Bill It's Another Day podcast?
Today, the podcast show has fetched 400 million downloads since its start, and an average of 350,000 downloads per episode, about 3.9 million downloads per week.
Well, hello there. It's another day. I'm Jim Harrington.
And I am Bill Knight. Well, today is Cash Patel Day. We're going to find out. I think it's today.
I think it's this afternoon. I think it's a fait accompli, as they would say. Like it's everyone's talking like it's a done deal, like he has the votes. So, but whenever they do something like that, something happens, you know? So I wouldn't count my chickens just yet. You know, somebody will, at the last minute, decide to switch sides or something like that and change things. But we'll find out soon enough. Also, some interesting stuff about Doge, Bill. They found a bunch of, first of all, they're going to fire 6,000 IRS agents today, supposedly.
Today is IRS See You Later Day.
And they're trying to make it out like, oh, it's terrible that he's doing that. But we've got hundreds of thousands of IRS employees, and these employees, from what I understand, are like new hires. They're within the last year or so, hired during the Biden administration, still on probationary periods. So I wouldn't, get all broken up. It's amazing. The left is grasping at anything to make Trump and his administration look bad. They've only been in office a month.
Well, let me ask you a question. You know, when you we don't have to equate it to radio, but, you know, when you get a job, unless you've got a contract you're there for a specific need or something like that, and it usually has a buyout clause, nothing is forever. Did they say, okay, you got a job. This is your forever job.
Absolutely not. You're absolutely correct. You know, you and I, like you said, we won't talk radio, but let's talk radio for a second because a lot of people don't understand our business. But it is a very volatile industry, meaning that it's hard to predict how long you're going to be anywhere. You may think you have the dream job locked in and get in there and find out that the station was sold to some other company with a whole different idea of where to go, and you're not part of it. So this is how the broadcasting business is. It's uncertain. Most businesses are that way. There's a uncertainty. So for government employees to think that they have a lifetime employment is naive. And for the media to talk like they should have one is, it proves they have an agenda, Bill. They're not paying attention.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, there was a time when you'd go to work, you go through school, you go to maybe college, but either way, you get a job. It might be your 9-to-5 job, and that's the job you had for your whole life. There was no guarantee about that, but that's what you had. But there were career positions. Now, I remember early on in radio, because radio is a very fluid, volatile business. Mm-hmm. Like if you want, I want to buy this house, you know, your credit's good and all that, you got the money. You've only had this job for less than a year or 1 year. We need a history of employment. Oh, you're in radio. That's a business that turns over a lot.
Yeah.
Now, that has changed, but the 1 year factor hasn't changed. But the simple fact is, and banks can't really judge on that. They have to judge on your credit worthiness, but they do look at the length of time and they'll even say, there's no guarantee. You never know anymore. And you don't.
No,
jobs
you don't.
Are not guaranteed. You go in there, you're at the will of the company, your employer, for you to be there, unless you've got a contract that spells something out. And even that has an escape clause, and that escape clause can be null and void if you're found to do something stupid that nullifies the whole thing that's somewhere in the fine print.
Look at the football players that are picked up by different teams, and you'll say, my God, he just signed a $25 million contract. He's just out of college. And it might be a 5-year contract, and there are all kinds of out clauses and, different verbiage in those contracts that will give the team an option to get rid of you basically whenever they want to and not pay you the full contract. As a matter of fact, you know, a lot of good agents are good agents when they can negotiate that clause out of your contract so that no matter mm-hmm. what happens to you, you get paid, you know. But that's very, very hard to do. So these IRS agents who were hired, I guess there were like, what, 80,000 of them during the Biden administration? They all didn't get fired, but as of today, the IRS will be laying off 6,000 employees. And by the way, they say it won't have any effect on the performance of the IRS. You got to wonder, what were they doing? That's just a...
Well, you know, sometimes your assistant needs to have an assistant.
Yeah, right.
I'm the assistant to the assistant of the assistant of the assistant.
Yeah.
Who is the assistant of that person over there?
You know, Sean Spicer. Remember Sean Spicer? Sean Spicer was the press secretary, first one, I think, for President Trump in his first administration. And I guess he had a position outside of government for a while. And then as Trump was, when he resigned from his press secretary position, President Trump said, well, what do you want to do? I can help you out. They were friends. And he gave them a position. He gave them a position at the U.S. Naval Academy. And, well, I'm going to let him explain the story because it's interesting All right. because what he did was essentially set legal precedent. And you got to listen to this, folks. Listen very carefully. It's funny. He's talking to Glenn Beck. I believe this was a couple of days ago. And it's about 5 minutes, 6 minutes long. It's worth listening to. Listen.
I stepped down as White House press secretary, and the president has always been kind and offered to appoint me to a couple boards. He appointed me to two of them. One of them was the White House Commission on Fellows. I was a commissioner there. And then he also was kind enough to make me one of his appointees to the board of visitors of the U.S. Naval Academy. So I was sworn into office. Joe Biden comes into office. And so on January 20th, myself and all of the White House commissioners at that fellowship committee resigned because it's a White House commission and the new president has a right to have people for White House commissions.
Sure.
Fair enough. Well, September 1st, I get an email of 2021 and it says, Dear Mr. Spicer, thank you for your service to the U.S. Naval Academy Board of Visitors. By 6 o'clock tonight, please submit your resignation or you will be fired. And I thought, whoa, what? Now, just for context, remember, Glenn, September 1st, my term ended November 1st, 60 days later. I was like, you couldn't wait 60 days just wow. to have it for free? So I was like, I'd been sworn into office. My term was, you know, ended that time, and I obviously wasn't going to get reappointed. Biden had his right to appoint his people. Great. So it turns out that he fired everybody. Myself from the Naval Academy Board, Russ Vogt from the Naval Academy Board, and then a guy named H.R. McMaster from the West Point Board, who, by the way, H.R. McMaster, you remember, was a national security advisor to Trump, three-star Army general, who was a graduate of West Point, a distinguished professor at West Point, and the Friday after that Tuesday email was going to be honored at West Point as a distinguished alumni in their awards ceremony. So anyway, he fires us September 1st. I don't resign. I said, I'm not resigning. You can fire me if you want. And then Stephen Miller in America First came to me and said, we have an idea. I said, okay, what's the idea? He goes, we want to sue Biden. Now, Glenn, I'm not a lawyer.
Right.
And I said, guys, I watch a lot of Law and Order, but how in God's earth, if we sue the guy in September, I mean, my term ends November 1st. We're never going to get back on the board. And they said, no. Let's go to court and make Joe Biden argue that he has the absolute authority to fire anybody. And because we're not going to win the case. They'll rule against us. And I was like, oh, this is brilliant. So the only people, but here's the kicker. The only people who were willing to put their name on that lawsuit are myself and Russ Vogt. Of all of the other people that were so honored that President Trump had appointed them, and they went to everyone and said, hey, will you sign on to this? And they said, thanks, we're busy. Russ Vogt. So the case became Spicer et al. V. Biden. It goes up to the court. The court says the president has the absolute authority to that. We appeal the decision. It goes to the appeals level, and the court again reaffirms the decision that Joe Biden and the president of the United States have the absolute authority to fire anyone. And the media started calling Glenn, and they go, you lost the case. And I said at the time, did I? So Donald Trump gets elected, and this is where it gets really fun. You'll love this because you know the rest of the story.
Here it comes.
Yes, thank you, Paul Harvey. So the New York. I write this story in this op-ed for the New York Post, saying, "Hey, guess what? Spicer v. Biden has given President Trump the authority to fire anyone he wants. I hope that President Trump executes it." And the White House is tweeting, sending me messages back. Guess who we just fired? Guess who we just fired? And I'm living in this glory. Well, I write this piece for the New York Post explaining, hey, here's what we did. Here's the legal basis. All of these people who are about to get fired by Trump should thank President Biden for this. Now, here's where it gets fun. The New York Post in the editing process says to me, okay, well, was it just the service academies? And I said, no, they had the right to fire anyone. And they said, well, give us some examples. And so I've got the list of boards and commissions that the president can appoint to. There's like couple hundred too. And I start reading one of the editors. I said, well, they could fire, there's the Battlefield Commission, there's the Truman Scholarship, there's the Kennedy Center. She goes, oh, put that in the op-ed. Put that, people will identify with that. And then we added a couple other examples to the op-ed. So the op-ed gets published in the New York Post, and it gets a lot of coverage, whatever. And President Trump continues to fire people. And when they fire the board of the Kennedy Center, the Washington Post calls, the spokesman for the Kennedy Center, and he says, are you going to be opposing President Trump firing you? And on the record, the spokesman for the Kennedy Center says, we can't. Spicer v. Biden sets the precedent for this, gives the president the authority to do this. So now here's the kicker. The Washington Post calls me and says, what do you think about what the Kennedy Center is saying? Now, I have a hard enough time keeping up with President Trump. I don't focus on what the Kennedy Center is saying. I'm sorry. That's really not my thing. So I said, I don't know. And they go, are you serious? You don't know that they just cited your case as the reason that they can't oppose or object to what President Trump just did. And I said, oh, my God, that's amazing. I'm glad to have played a small part of it. A day later, the reporter calls me back and says, I went and read all of the court documents, and you're right. And I said, of course, what do you mean? I wasn't lying to you. And he said, I've got to write this big story. And I said to my team at the time, my family, I was like, oh, my God, this is not going to go well. The Washington Post wants to write a story about Spicer v. Biden and why it's given the president the authority to use. And then I get a text and it says, hey, we're putting the story up. And I go, oh, like these things don't end well for people like me and right. people like you. Yeah. It's like you don't get it's like getting a call from the IRS. It doesn't go well when they go, hey, I'm from the Washington Post and I'm writing a story about Glenn Beck. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I click on the story and I'm reading and I'm like, okay. Like, when's the bad part coming? And the only part is I normally, there's that phrase, Glenn, where people say that they hate watch MSNBC or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hate read the comments. I had to do it. I normally will not read the comments. I don't read the Twitter replies, whatever. But I read the comments. And these snowflakes, they're so offended. They're like, Sean Spicer's an evil person for suing the president. I'm like, wait a second. You have to understand the context. Never in the history of the United States had any president ever removed somebody from a service academy board prior to their term being done for anything less than malfeasance. And even that, we can't find an example. Never. Joe Biden was so petty. And the point is, they're mad at me. The comments, there's like thousands of comments when you click on the Washington Post story, and I posted it on all my social media stories if someone wants to go read it. And I was like, wait a second, you're mad at me. They're like, I can't believe you did this. And I'm like, wait, I did nothing. I literally had 60 days to go. I'm sure I would have gotten some little, medallion from the Naval Academy and said, thanks for your service, be on your way. And yet, here they are. Like all these snowflakes putting comments in the Washington Post that like I'm the bad guy. Because why? Because I stood up and said, hey, you want to argue that you have to do this, then give a future Republican president. Now, at the time, myself and Russ Vogt had no idea that President Trump hadn't even declared for re-election yet. But we thought to ourselves, hey, you know what? We'll stand up.
You know, it was really interesting. About see, what he did is he set precedent. He set precedent by essentially Biden, because his administration was incredibly petty. Instead of giving him the 2 months to, you know, resign and go his merry way, decided he was going to make an example out of Sean Spicer, and he demanded that he either leave by, I guess, the end of the day or the end of the week, or he was going to fire him. So Sean, he made him fire him. And Stephen Miller, who you see him all the time, he's always being interviewed on Fox or something, he says, hey, Sean, let's sue him. And Sean said, we're not going to get the job back. And if we do, we only get it for 2 months. And he said, that's not the point. Miller was thinking so far ahead. This guy is a smart guy. You see him interviewed all the time. And you can tell he's a thinker. And so they sued Biden, and Biden won the suit. They said in court, legally, the president has the right to fire whoever he wants to. So Trump has just fired an entire board of the Kennedy Center. He's going to lay off today 6,000 IRS agents. And someone's going to probably stick their head up and try to sue him. But the precedent was set by Biden because of Sean Spicer. Go ahead. You want to sue us? We can point to the Biden administration. We can point to the case where the courts rule that the president is the ultimate say and has complete control over who he hires and fires. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. And he's quite proud of that. That's something he carries with him like a badge, obviously. That was on the Glenn Beck Show. And you can hear the whole thing, I guess, on Glenn's podcast.
Right.
The whole thing goes about 12.
He went a long way to tell the story. But, you know, we all do that. We're storytellers, and that's what we do. We're not broadcasters. That's a whole different thing. But and I'll explain that sometime why we're not broadcasters. Maybe CBS.
I don't. You have to explain it to me. I always thought I was, but
okay.
After all these years in the business, I wish you'd explain it now.
Okay, I'll tell you right now. You know, it was just something I came across the other day, and I said, "Oh, that's interesting." I'm really not a broadcaster. I'm a communicator, because broadcasting is kind of a farm term, an old time farm term. That when you go out, you know, you see the tractor out in the field putting along, you know, and it's pulling the trailer, and he's either got seed or he's got fertilizer, manure. And that's what they call broadcasting the crop.
Yeah, what they used to do in the manure. Before they had tractors, farmers would walk around with a sack of seed over their shoulder, and they would take the seed in their hand and throw it out over the field.
It's called broadcasting or manure when they're fertilizing. And I'm sitting there going,
hopefully they use gloves then. But
sowing the seeds of deception here, or broadcasting the manure. It's CBS News.
I don't think things have changed all that much. If you're talking about
manure, haven't really. You know, that's what they're doing. They're sowing the seeds of deception there. So, they're broadcasters, all right. And I found it interesting. What a funny thing.
What is interesting, I think, about that little clip there is that they thought they were going to nail Spicer. They were going to embarrass him. First guy in the history of the United States to be removed from an advisory position with the military academy. Oh, that'll be – I guess he was on the board. He was unceremoniously removed to the – pleasure of the president. You know, this guy Biden, he always seemed to be a backstabber, you know.
But he had to go public about it and say, well, I just today, you know, and the Democrats are going, we got those Republicans. Well, you know what? How does it feel back at you? And we're not doing it out of revenge. We're doing it because you got some stupid people in play. And you've got an abundance of stupid people in play, but you know, when you sit there and say, well, you can't do that. Well, Joe made it so that you can.
Yeah. You know, there's a guy who used to play for the Minnesota Vikings. His name is Chris Cluey. He was a punter. Now, a punter, for those of you who don't follow football, is essentially a guy who can kick a football a long distance. You know, they hike it to him. He kicks it. Then he runs off the field and sits on the bench. So, but you're playing in the NFL, you start to believe, boy, I'm pretty important, you know. I can kick a football. Yeah, I'm. Well, he obviously thinks that it translates to other parts of his life. He went into a city council meeting out in California. He had to be dragged out of the meeting by the police because he felt it was the perfect opportunity for him to express his displeasure about MAGA and the entire MAGA movement. And I want you to listen to his complaints about MAGA. Every single one of them that I heard was absolutely, positively wrong. As a matter of fact, it was like the reverse of what he was saying about MAGA. It's only a minute long. Listen.
Unfortunately, it's clear that this council does not listen. So instead, I'm going to take my time to say what MAGA has stood for these past 3 weeks. MAGA stands for trying to erase trans people from existence. MAGA stands for resegregation and racism. MAGA stands for censorship and book bans. MAGA stands for firing air traffic controllers while planes are crashing. MAGA stands for firing the people overseeing our nuclear arsenal. MAGA stands for firing military veterans and those serving them at the VA, including canceling research on veteran suicide. MAGA stands for cutting funds to education, including for disabled children. MAGA is profoundly corrupt, unmistakably anti-democracy, and most importantly, MAGA is explicitly a Nazi movement. You may have replaced a swastika with a red hat, but that is what it is. I will now engage in the time-honored American tradition of peaceful civil disobedience.
And he walks over in front of the council members and lies on the floor. He's immediately picked up by the police and carried out of the room. But the thing about it is, okay, everything that that guy just said is 100% wrong, which says to me that he spent far too much time on the practice field kicking a football than paying attention to civics. You know, I mean,
well, he missed the ball and kicked himself in the head a few times is what he did.
You know. Well, that's a distinct possibility. But everything, I want to see what I can find, if I can break down the different line by lines that this guy said about.
There were a lot of untruths in there. Well, they were all untruth. I mean, to sit there and call a party a Nazi party, well, I'm sorry, but we're not a Nazi party. As a matter of fact, your singularity of your party, you know, one party rule is very much Nazism.
Billy said MAGA stands for firing military veterans and those serving them at the VA, including canceling research on veteran suicide. This is like something that I don't know where he's getting his information from, but
they make it up.
They really and truly do. He said MAGA stands for cutting funds for education, including for disabled children. Now, just because they want to get rid of the Department of Education, but it doesn't mean that they want to stop having organizations, governmental organizations, running those, but they want them to be state-run. They want them to be local, you know. The government has done a lot of overreach, but this guy doesn't understand that. Having been married to a teacher for a long time, I can tell you that there's a lot of interference, a lot of political corruption.
A lot of bureaucracy in the education business.
Yep. He says MAGA is profoundly corrupt, unmistakably anti-democracy, and most important, MAGA is explicitly a Nazi movement. This guy has got a screw loose, okay? MAGA is probably the least. MAGA is American. MAGA is, what it means is, and I'm afraid he doesn't understand this, it just simply means make America great again. That's all it stands for. It is, by the way, you don't get a card, you don't get a decoding ring, you don't get anything special by being a follower of MAGA.
We don't get a decoding ring?
You got to stop going out to the mailbox. It's not coming.
Yeah, it's not coming. Okay.
Yeah, you get nothing other than a good feeling that you believe in the principles of the United States, the ones that the country was founded on. Now, I'm going to tell you something. When you start using government for lawfare, when you start trying to put your political opponents in jail, that could be considered fascistic. That could be a Nazi kind of thing to be doing. And that was Joe Biden and the left trying to put Trump in jail. So this guy is a numbskull. He says you may have replaced a swastika with a red hat, but that is what it is. This guy is a meatball. But, you know, the press, they will run out, man. If you're standing in the middle of a busy highway yelling like that, they'll go out in the middle of the highway with you to get the pictures. They want to see it. They want to make Trump and the people who followed, who voted for him, they want to make him look bad. You know what, Bill, amazes me? You would think that the Democrats and the left would look around and say, wait a second, we lost by 77 million votes. We lost the Electoral College vote. And God, I think we lost the popular vote, too, for the first time since, what, 2004? I mean, maybe something we're doing is wrong. Maybe we should reevaluate our platform. Maybe we should decide to stop the personal attacks on people who are in government now and the people who follow the people in government now. Maybe we should plan a strategy that involves some kind of a positive step forward on our part. You know, we're gonna make you more financially solvent. We're going to cut back on your taxes. No, Bill, they've doubled down.
Well, the party of being so inclusive, and the reason they were inclusive was to give the appearance that they, you know, that they had the will of the people, and they wanted to conquer and divide and control. And what's happened is the people that they've controlled have taken over the small little group that's there of the crazies and the whack jobs. There are a lot of Democrats now that are going, you know what, I'm going to start donating to the Republican Party. I mean, their base, the people, the party has shrunk. Because these people that were Democrats, lifelong Democrats, are going, I got to go with Trump. And I've got to put my money on the Republican side because my party has failed me. And so these little trolls that are inside of that party, you know, they've garnered control. And the James Carvels that are crazy are saying, you guys just got to shut up and listen.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, James, they're not going to shut up because they're the noisemakers that you brought in, and they're telling you to shut up and listen as they sit there and drive that party down the drain.
You know,
and that's what's going on.
It's funny. Yesterday, the Department of Transportation came out and said the New York City congestion tax is unlawful, and it is to stop now. And Trump came out and with some kind of a Truth Social comment like, we addressed the congestion tax. It is no more. It was hurting the middle class. All hail the king or something like that. And he was doing it.
Trump, the King Trump thing. Yeah. And now they're going.
He loves to zing.
Well, you know, that was to sit there and get their goat because he knew that that would take off and they would say, oh, see, you know.
The king,
Well, you know what? He's playing you guys, and damn if it's not funny. And if you don't see the humor in it and step back and look at it and go, okay, you got it.
So, yeah.
Yeah, good one. Yeah,
but you know what they did? No, Kathy Hochul had a press conference in a subway car and honest to God, you can't make this stuff up. She says that we haven't had a king in over 250 years, and we don't have one now. In the background, you hear the sycophants, probably all staff members and paid employees, going, "Yay!"
Well,
and,
you know what?
We're not going to start now. And she's talking about the congestion tax. By the way, the New York Post, I believe. No, or was it? Maybe it was the Wall Street Journal. But one of them said, it probably is one of the most hated taxes ever. People hate it. Bill, people who work on the transit, MTA, who live out of, let's say they live in Jersey or live in Connecticut, they had to pay $9 to go to work. You know, just to go into work, they paid $9.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they haven't had a king in 200 years or a queen, but they do have a bitch there, and that's it. But as far as taxes and tolls, you know, we pay taxes so that we have roads. That's part of our taxation. But they go, well, you need this expressway. The only way that we can really justify it is to do a toll. So this road is around for 40 years. It's paid for by the toll, and they still collect tolls on it.
Oh, sure.
And we still pay taxes on it. Wait a minute. Where is all this money going? Because that road needs to be repaved and something done to it. I'm paying for maintenance and taxes. I'm paying for everything about that road. And I'm paying a toll to drive on that road. Excuse me. Do I need to pay a tax on the tax?
Well, I'll tell you what they did is, right off the bat, people don't talk about this, but I saw pictures of it. The city had these cameras installed, I guess, at all the different entrances to the city. If you came through the Lincoln Tunnel or came across the GW Bridge, they had cameras set up on the inbound lanes to capture your license plate so they knew that you were coming into the city, and I guess you had to pay a fee. And that cost probably millions of dollars just to install the cameras. And now they're, I guess if this ruling comes, if it holds any water, those cameras will become obsolete. They won't have any function.
If all the money they make is not going to the roads, the maintenance, the upkeep, whatever, where is the money going?
Well, you know, there's a lot of questions about that going around right now, Bill. Lots of questions. As a matter of fact, you know, I want to play a tape. You know, we lost Rush. Before we do that, though, right? Before we go any further, I think it's important that we take a deep breath, pour ourselves a cup of delicious Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee, and just calm down for a second, because there's a lot of things out there that make you upset. You know, there's a lot of things that tick you off in today's world, and you need to pause for a second. And you know, the perfect drink to do that is Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee, either a regular blend, a medium roasted blend, or our decaf medium roasted blend. Delicious coffee, and it's available at rightsideshop.com, rightsideshop, all one word, .com, and it's right there. By the way, if you forget that address, you just go to our website, which is itsanotherday.com. It's another day, the name of the show. Itsanotherday.com. And on the home page, on the upper part, there's a toolbar, you know, where they have different buttons. There's one there that you press it, rightsideshop.com. It'll take you right to the storefront. And it's not a terribly expensive blend of coffee. There's more expensive blends out there. It's worth trying, at least. And by the way, when you buy a bag of the coffee, you help us out. You help us get the word out, because we're taking our small portion. We don't get a lot of money. We haven't bought the villa on the Riviera yet from the proceeds from Right Side Coffee. I had a friend of mine say, "Hey, you guys are making a lot of money selling that coffee." I said, no, we're not. Not quite the Juan Valdez of the coffee business
I don't see anything there yet.
But it is helping the program out. So if you take the time to buy some, every little bit helps. And it helps. Well, for example, you know, we brought Juan Jose and the Border Crossers across to sing our jingle. I mean, we could have had them record it in Tijuana or someplace like that. But no, we figured we'd give them the flotation device and let them swim across, which, of course, they did a few months back. And
you did get that flotation device back, right?
Yeah. No, I think they get to keep it, actually.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, it's only shaped like a rubber duck, so it's not like...
Okay.
Anyway, guys, if you'd sing, I would appreciate it. Oh, that's such a good song, you know? They're playing our song, Bill, Wake Up on the Right Side with Right Side Coffee. I wanted to take a moment. You know, we lost Rush Limbaugh. I want to say it was it February 13th or something like that? It was recently, 4 years ago. It's been four years.
Yeah, I was going to say it's been three or four years ago. Yeah.
It was 4 years ago. Hard to believe it. And I still miss him, and I still can hear his voice like it was yesterday. Because I was a regular listener. The guy was intelligent, and he was always fun to listen to. Even when you feel kind of, you know, lousy, you could turn him on and it'd take your mind away from the other stuff. Yeah, it was political, but he had a certain magic to his delivery and to his whole performance that made him special. And it'll be a while before we get somebody who can come across and duplicate what he had. But he was talking at a at a conference in 2019 about the Democrats and what they're doing. Listen to how he framed it.
Many of you weren't alive, the 1995 budget bill. During that time, the Republicans are being accused of starving children because of budget cuts in the school lunch program. There weren't any cuts. There were reductions in the rate of growth. The Democrats had a bunch of 12-year-olds, junior high school students, writing letters to Republicans in Congress. Please, I can't learn when I'm starving. Please, I can't learn when I'm hungry. And the media is covering this as though it's legitimate. And it was as big a hoax as the whole climate change contains every issue the left wants in their bid to transform this country. So please, I know it's susceptible. They're scaring you. They're making you think the planet's not going to support life in 20 years. It's bunk, folks. It's just bunk.
It's bunk. That's a typical Rushism. That was back in 2019. The guy, he was the kind of guy that he could tell where they were going with all of this nonsense. I'd love to hear his opinion of where they're at now, the Democrats. By the way, it was announced, I believe, yesterday, Ed Martin, the acting attorney general or district, I forgot exactly what his position was, but he started an investigation into Chuck Schumer. And Chuck Schumer has said nothing about this. He's being very quiet.
Well, why would he? He still sticks his foot in his mouth and spews his lies. And
well, that's and just Chuck, that's why he's being investigated, Bill. He's being investigated for lying openly and with great fervor, as they would say. With
great pride, yeah.
Yes.
You know, I'll make a point about the Democrats because the party is shrinking, but there is a thing that I call political pride. You know, you're proud of who you are and what you are, no matter how wrong it is. There are diehard Democrats out there, and they're going, well, you know, they may not want to admit Trump is right and Trump is a good thing and that they're wrong. So they're going to go along with the lie going, it's only 4 years and our party will be back in control.
Oh.
But what happens if it's not? What's going to happen to these people? You can't wait for the what if. You have to embrace the what is. And what is that you have been lied to. Face it, you know, and deal with it. Doesn't mean you don't have...
Bill, these are drive-by political thinkers. I don't mean that these are stupid people. I mean, people on the left...
Right.
There are some very smart people who are...
Because they believe the news.
They just... They get their news, for example, from NPR or MSNBC. And that's it. They have it all figured out. And they don't realize that they're being manipulated big time by these news organizations. You know, NPR, I don't know if you heard about this, Sheryl Crow had a Tesla. Did you hear about this? Sheryl Crow had a Tesla.
Yeah, she sold it and said bye-bye. She's taking the money to donate to NPR.
They need it because I don't know whether you're aware of this, folks. Let's say you're doing a typical talk show morning on a radio station like, any kind of radio, if a big radio station in a major metropolitan city, usually you have your engineer and you have what they call a producer, who's somebody who during the daytime schedules your interviews and maybe gathers your audio clips together and things you'll use the next day, kind of sets the program up for you, gives you some direction. You have conversations with this person and you end up building your show for the next day. That's three people. Engineer, producer, and the talent. At NPR, the morning show has about 28 or 30 different people working the morning show, including a chef. Yeah, you heard that right. They have a chef on staff. I guess for making coffee and donuts and whatever, you know, breakfast, whatever. There's a chef. This is nonsense. Yet they talk to you, the listener, like, well, it's another time to support NPR. You know, we do great things, and without NPR, my God, what would you have? You'd probably have an amazingly large choice of different people. If you're a liberal, you like NPR because, you know, liberal conversation has proven to be boring and a format that doesn't garner any audience. Case in point, Air America. Do you remember Air America, Bill?
Yes, I've gone through the story. I know about the previous network that it took over, and it was a failure.
Yeah, Air America was an investment by, at the time, pretty good money to build a liberal talk network that would compete against the Rush Limbaughs of the world. And then it started out, and it unceremoniously went down the tubes. It was terrible. They hired people who had no background in the media per se. They had some people who were known for other things. Maybe they were comedians in another life, and all of a sudden they were talent on Air America. They didn't know how to keep the show together. They didn't know how to talk one-on-one like we're talking right now, right? They didn't have that gift. And I don't mean I have the gift, but you know what I'm saying. They didn't have a radio understanding. And so they ended up tanking. They were taxi cabs that had more listeners in New York than Air America had listeners around the country.
Yeah, somebody once told me, you could put a mic to the incandescent hum of a micro or a light bulb.
Yes.
And somebody somewhere will listen to it. NPR has no listen.
Huh? It proved that wrong.
And NPR has no listeners whatsoever. Now, the old way of doing ratings is people would get diaries. They would get paid, like, I think, $5 to fill it out for a week or 2 weeks. And that was the system. And then it was... That represented a certain portion of the population, and that's how we got our ratings. They went over and they changed over to a system to where it was monitored by when people listened to the radio. There was a signal that you put out. Your signal was encoded, and this would count that. Well, you'd think, well, that would be honest. That probably would help NPR. Nah, it didn't, because it stunk. Before, it still stinks, and no matter how you do it, nobody, not even the liberals, listen to it. So why do you support it? I don't know. Why do we give tax dollars to it? I don't know. It is a waste.
Excuse me, I was just listening to a fluorescent light.
Thank you.
No, in all honesty, Bill, this is true. Rush Limbaugh had far more liberal listeners listening to his show than Air America had listening to Air America.
Okay, why? Because they hated what he said.
Right.
But, they sometimes you listen to something going, I can't believe they said that.
Yeah.
I did that with a morning show I had.
Yeah.
And people would go sit there. I had a guy call me one time. How do you have this guy on the air? Just this morning he did this. Yesterday he did this. The day before that. And last week he was talking about this. And I sat there and I said.
Glad you were listening.
No, I said, got you. And he goes, what? I said, I got you. He goes, what do you mean? Well, you just told me what he did all this week and last week, too. You listen.
Well, not only that, Rush.
And there was a big pause, and then he goes, I get it.
I can remember listening many times on Rush's show. He was on for, what, 30 years or something like that? An amazingly long period of time. And I can remember hearing people calling and saying, hey, Rush, I listened to your show. I started listening back in 1992. I couldn't stand you. I mean, I thought you were a nut. And I kept listening, and after a while, I kind of got where you were coming from, and now I just can't go a day without listening to you. He converted a lot of people, and that's the thing, Bill. I truly believe that many of the people who are ardent leftists right now, they think of themselves as being the right, they have the right cause. I do think that some of these people, if they just pay attention for a little bit, if they just take the time to think about what's going on in the world and what we're saying on this side of the aisle, it might change them. But they have to pause for a second and listen. One of the things about the right is the right has listened to the left. It's hard not to hear what the left is saying. You scream it, you sing it, You only have one song, by the way. If I hear "Hey, Hey, Ho, Ho" one more time, my eyes will bleed. You go to a rally, "Hey, Hey, Oh, Doge has got to go. Hey, I mean, come on. They changed the lyric to the, it's a terrible chant. But anyway, that's besides the point. The point I'm trying to make is that if you take the time, we hear what you're saying. We just don't, we look at the facts and say you're making the wrong conclusions. What we ask you to do on the left is take a deep breath. Stop yelling at us. Stop even hating us. Just walk away from that for a little bit and just think about the situation for a second. Think about what we're talking about and what we're saying. Be honest, not just with us, but be honest with yourself. Listen to what we're saying. We're talking about making America greater. We're talking about, for example, with Doge, we're not talking about stealing your money. We're not talking about closing down government entities that are good for the country. We're talking about waste. We're talking about duplicity. We're talking about things that duplication of effort. You don't need four or five people doing the same job.
All right. We're talking about saving you money. We're talking about cutting budgets and making America great again. We're talking about with the tariffs and everything going on that there could be a point to where you are paying less taxes. Cost of goods go down. We want to get our due fair share of taxes. You know, you get a fine bottle of wine or whiskey from across the seas. It comes in on a cargo ship that is not taxed. You know, they're foreign registered ships. They're not taxed. That bottle comes in. Yeah, the merchant here jacks up the price of it, but it's not because of the tax or the tariff. It's because he does. And that's that. But imagine if our exports were taxed equally, you know.
Reciprocal.
Their imports were taxed equally as to what ours are. Well, then it would be an even playing table. And as far as these Democrats go, you know, we're saying good stuff. They're out there, you know, they're promoting hate and violence.
Yeah.
Take, for instance, a Tesla dealership because, you know, Elon Musk, Doge.
Yeah.
You know, in where was it?
California.
It was either way. So this Democrats promoting violence. So some of these Democrats go out there and shoot up a dealership that's a Tesla dealership.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a Democrat, you're going, yay! Well, that Democrat that did that, he needs to be locked up because he incited violence.
What if he hit somebody? What if there was a, forget the fact they said, well, the business was closed. What if there was a janitor? You know, custodial people cleaning the place up and got hit by a bullet. I'm just saying, that's the kind of stupidity that happens on the left.
If a Republican came over and shot up your yard, they would be arrested for all kinds of hate crimes, probably attempted murder, and, they would have to, they'd be ordered to pay back the damage that they did and the emotional damage that was done to your delicate little heart.
Yes.
Well, you know, turn that around. You know what? Yeah. You know, we have feelings too. We have expenses too. You want to do stuff like that? Do you really want to go down that road? I wouldn't do that if I were you.
You know, if you noticed, this is a generality, but it seems like a lot of these guys on the left are kind of wimps. Okay, I'm just saying. And when you look at the guys on the right who are following, you know, the Make America movement, they're usually tough guys. They're, you know, auto workers, they're farmers, they're tougher guys. And they also, a lot of them are vets. You know, they've held an actual rifle in their hands and stuff like that. Do you want to get into some kind of a confrontation situation with a guy who's bigger, stronger, and more able to take care of himself? I don't think so. You don't want that. It's time to just, on the left, if you just take a moment, take a deep breath, think about what's going on in the world. Stop just living with your, this. Like, I think of this football player, this punter. You know, he thought he was really being special by getting up and condemning MAGA. But it was obvious to anybody who understands the situation that this guy absolutely has not paid a bit of attention to the political situation and has no idea what MAGA is all about. You know, he it's orange man bad, period, that's it, and anybody who follows him is a stupid person. That's what he thinks, and that's not the case. You know, I wanted to play something. The left is always talking about what they're going to do when, You know, one of their stars, believe it or not, is the Los Angeles mayor. Her name is Karen Bass. You might remember her during the fires a few weeks ago, right? She was the mayor. She was the mayor who ran off to Ghana for 10 days while California, her city, was...
Who would have let her do that?
But, you know, she has the answer right now to the problem. She has the answer. She's decided that she's setting up a committee to investigate her.
When I talked about it with the fire chief, what she said is that we have warnings of Santa Ana winds a lot, but predicting this, and you saw, we from the city, from the county, that level of preparation really didn't happen. So it didn't reach that level to me to say something terrible could happen and maybe you shouldn't have gone on the trip.
Why didn't
But
it
to
happen?
Me, I don't know. I mean, I think that that's one of the things we need to look at. So two investigations are taking place, one internal to the city, and that's the fire commission, because that's mandated by the city charter. Mm-hmm. So the commission will hire an outside entity to examine everything, the pre deployment, you know, why were firefighters sent home, you know, all of that should have taken place that didn't. And then also the governor has contracted with the Fire Safety Research Institute, which is a national institute that investigated what happened in the fires in Maui. So everything that happened, including that, needs to be examined. But I will tell you that I felt absolutely terrible not being here for my city and not being here for my family, who was impacted by the fires as well. And so when I say it was a mistake, absolutely, the idea that I was not present was very painful.
So I think you should fire yourself.
No, what she's trying to do is pin the tail on the other donkey. She's sitting there setting up an inquisition so she can put the blame on somebody else, not take any responsibility herself.
Yeah, well, it's hard to do, but she makes it sound like she's surprised that she went to Africa. I'm amazed that I would take the time to fly in an airplane for 10 or 12 hours to Africa when I had a good idea that there might be fires, you know. But and so when they called me and said, "You better get back here, Madam Mayor, because the city is burning," I was really surprised. Hey, what a fathead. And the other thing is this, Bill, the Democrats are really good at setting up a committee. That's all. That's all deflection. That's all BS.
You know? It keeps her out of the hot seat for a long time. She might lose the next election. You never know.
You know, when Trump went out there a few days after the fire and had a town hall meeting, you know, they literally right on site, he didn't want to hear about what's going to happen next week or next month or down the road. He wanted to know what was going to happen today.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference between Trump and these lifelong politicians. But anyway, go ahead.
Trump is a guy that wants things done. He's going through that with Air Force One. There's things that have to be done to it. Now, I didn't realize. See, I thought they got some new planes a while back. But these things are 37, 40 years old. So they're not new planes. They never were. These have been old refab planes for a long, long time. And, yeah, they got some pretty big hardware on them. But, you know, we're talking about the leader of the free world, whether it be Democrat or Republican. It should be the best damn thing in the sky all the time.
Well, do you remember when Trump got into office the first time around, they said it's going to cost you $5 billion to make Air Force One, a new Air Force. I guess I didn't know that was for one plane or two, but the point is, the figure was, he said, no, then I'm going to cancel the contract. If the contract doesn't start with the number three, then we have no deal. So
3999999. Yeah, 999, yeah.
That's exactly what Boeing did. Cents. Boeing came back, but think about it. At least they cut more than $1 billion off the contract. So that was a win for Trump. But when Biden got in, I think he stopped the contract for a while. He did something to slow the process down. So now Trump's back into office. Now they're saying that the new planes won't be delivered until, what, 2029? 2029? Christ, it'll be obsolete by the time they roll it down the runway.
Yeah, so he's looking at going to anywhere, even foreign entities, to buy planes that they will be, you know, refitted, done right, and painted up, and they may be used planes that have been, you know, recertified. But well, see,
you don't want to see Boeing doesn't need another failure. Boeing is having a bad time. And by the way, people have been paying attention to what's happening with Boeing. We'll tell you that they believe that the biggest thing to hurt Boeing in recent years was the DEI thing. They started to hire people who, as opposed to hiring the most qualified, they started to check the boxes off for hirees, and they got the also-rans. So you started losing the excellence.
Yeah, and a lot of these people, and I don't want to make this a sexist thing, but I saw a clip on a woman who goes, "Oh, I realized that Boeing was the place to go because they had all this inclusion and they had a lot of women on board." And all of a sudden, I knew that's it. And then she got the high-ranking position. Did not have a degree in aerodynamics, anything to do with this or business management, but just, you know, she got in there because that she wore a skirt.
Well,
checked a few boxes.
They're committing suicide. They're committing corporate suicide by doing this. They're killing a great industry, great business. Because what they should, all they should be concerned with, and this, by the way, I think is the difference between NASA and SpaceX. SpaceX, all he cares about is the greatest minds. And what he does, you know, what Musk does is he sets up these incentive programs. He'll say, I want to have a rocket that comes back and lands on the platform and is reusable, right? And someone will say, well, no, NASA couldn't do that. Why do you think we can? Well, tell you what, I'm going to put this kind of a carrot out there. I'm going to put like, $5 million bonus or something. That's my figure, not his. I'm going to put a $5 million bonus to whoever thinks of how to do this. The winning competition, the winning guess or the winning plan gets that bonus. And that's how he gives these crazy incentives. And these young, brilliant people, think of it as a challenge. They go out and they do it. You know, all of a sudden, now it's becoming the norm. Now, I just saw where they landed one, the day before yesterday. Another one came in and landed on the platform, you know, just as it always, they always do now. And that's the difference between, you know, like if you go Airbus right now, I don't think Airbus is, even though they're in Europe, and I have my questions about them, I still think they're looking to have the most qualified. Maybe it'll catch up. Maybe I'm wrong. But they don't seem to have the problems with their planes that we're having with Boeing. And Boeing, by the way, was the marker. It was the state of the art. It was what you wanted to be like Boeing. They had the way of making airplanes and that couldn't be beat. And then what? They had the 737 MAX problem, and all of a sudden things started to change.
Well, they got the contracts, but they didn't deliver what I wouldn't say they delivered on the goods. But you know, there were other companies. I don't think McDonnell Douglas is around anymore, but there's still Lockheed out there. Lockheed's still out there, but I think they do military. But could they ramp up and,
sure.
and say, "Yeah, we can go and build a commercial or a presidential airline"? They could probably do it.
Let me ask you a question. Don't you think? And I this is a rhetorical question. I know the answer, right? Don't you think that if he turned to Elon Musk and said, "I need two new Air Force Ones. I want them to be state of the art, the most competitive. I want them to have all the bells and whistles, all of the comfort." Do you think Elon Musk could build it?
6 months, probably. Probably stops.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Yes,
absolutely.
You know, all you have to do is you probably get your engineers say, okay, these are the designs. They are out there.
Yes.
You know, everything that Boeing's got is out there. You can take that. This is what we want. We want that 747. So you take that, you bring it up to date, get your architects there.
Knowing Musk, he may say, well, you know, Mr. President, 747 is a great design, but our engineers have designed something a little bit better than that. You want to see it?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He could sit there and take that to his whatever you call his art department that will sit there.
Yeah.
Draw a new version of this. Now you take it to your engineers. How do you build this? Build me the schematic.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We got the schematic. Let's build it. and let's put some.
And now we got to put all of these
on it.
Yeah, we put all these defensive gadgets on the plane to make it the most secure plane in the world. Can you do that, guys? Now give us a few minutes.
See, when most people, the people equate Elon and to Tesla, and he didn't come up with the company; he bought the company,
right?
He took over, but he's got defense contracts. He's got a buttload of them, and you know, having a contract to build a plane of that status. You know, and everyone's saying, oh, he's using this to, you know, get into things. Lockheed has had Boeing has had every chance in the world. They're building rockets.
Yeah.
They're over in his territory, and they're failing.
Yes.
They're failing in their own territory. So let's...
How would you like to be Boeing, right? And you sent, you took two astronauts up to the space station, 6 months ago, 8 months ago? And you stranded them there, and then by the way, the vehicle that you used, because you said it was unsafe, because your engineer said there was a problem, you ended up automatically retrieving that vehicle without a problem. So what you've proven is that they could have come home, if they were on that vehicle, but your engineers screwed up big time. Now they're stuck up there, and you haven't got a way of getting them back. So who do you turn to? You turn to that wild and crazy Elon Musk and SpaceX.
But, you know, the astronauts up there, because Elon said, yeah, it's political. The reason they're stranded up there is political. And I kind of wondered that, too. But, you know, that's me. You may have your own thoughts. Say, no, it's just the brakes. That's the way it goes. Well, it seems like Boeing's having a lot of brakes these days. And, you know, is there a political agenda by having these clowns up there? And they're sitting there, they're siding with Biden and Boeing. And I'm like going, well, you know what? See, if it were me, you know, the right thing to do is get them down.
Yeah.
But if they're sitting there going, oh, no, it's not political. No. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Let's wait and see if you get a Democrat in so you can have Boeing go back and fail again. We'll send up a supply ship, but you can't come back in it. And if that's the bed you want to live in,
yeah,
live in it up there.
Well, I think that, by the way, if they get Elon Musk involved, I'd be happy because the guy, he seems to have a way of turning mush into gold. I'll just leave it. You know, you can insert whatever definition you want for the term mush, but I think you know what I'm talking about.
Shinola, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. See, everyone has a different thought. Anyway,
we can dance around the word all day, but we'll keep dancing.
I wanted to talk about that crash up in Toronto. They had a, as you know, the plane that crashed 2 days ago and flipped over on its back. Amazing. And they showed video of it. Came in. Obviously, it didn't flare. Now they're saying they don't want to release the names of the crew because they say it may have been an all-female crew. By the way, I have absolutely no problem with an all-female crew. I think if they're qualified, if they're good pilots, so be it. And there are a lot of female pilots.
Yeah, I've flown in planes before that had female pilots, and they were damn good. You know, good takeoff, perfect landing, even in the worst of conditions. So you can't blame it on you know, what their sexual identity is, but you can blame it on their training if they were put into a position. And that could be a male, too.
Yes.
If they were put into a position and they didn't have the hours, they didn't have the training, you know, a lot of times you fly in the co-seat with a seasoned veteran who's ready to, you know, take the stick if you are lacking or at least correct what you're doing so that you can, you know how to flare the jet. You know how to keep it.
Sure.
You know, safe and make it a nice, safe landing. And if you do get some of those crosswinds, you know what to do. Now, I also noticed, too, that right gear.
Wake up on the right side with Bright Side Coffee.
You know, just in case of something like that. But that thing seemed to blow out right away.
Well, they came down. It looked like, and I looked at it over and over again, they were coming in. They didn't flare, like you said. They didn't slow down. When you flare, you lift your nose up and the wind slows the plane down. You know, the aerodynamics change, and the plane slows down, and supposedly, you're supposed to kind of gently touch the wheels down and then lower the nose. You're saying is true. It came in literally, it flew right into the ground really hard. But to me, I thought the last like 20 feet, Bill, it dropped. It was like they were looking for the ground and it just boom. And that's where the wheel gear got taken away, along with the right wing. But I wanted to play this for you. This is the CEO mm-hmm. of Delta. CEO of Delta, and he was on with Gail King on CBS Mornings, and she wanted to make it sound like Trump was the reason. Now, mind you, this was done in Canada, right? But CBS has an agenda. They're all out there trying to soil Trump with whatever they can soil him with. Unfortunately, like for them, and Trump said this with the interview with Elon Musk the other day with Hannity, he said, fortunately, the people get it, meaning the people see through their deceit and their deception, and they know that they're trying to smear them with a broad brush. Anyway, this is the CEO of Delta Airlines. Listen.
We welcome you back to CBS Mornings, but it's the story we're all talking about because there's still so much we don't know about why a Delta jet carrying 80 people crashed in Toronto on Monday. Two people are still hospitalized, but amazingly, everybody on board survived. That is such good news. Delta CEO Ed Bastian joins us now for an exclusive interview. We're also going to bring in our transportation correspondent, Chris Van Cleef, for this conversation. Good morning, Chris. Good morning, Ed. Good to see you, Ed Bastian, this morning. Chris?
Ed, can you talk to us?
Good morning, Chris. Good morning, Gil.
Yeah. And I know there's an investigation here, so there's some things you can't tell us, but have you been able to learn anything about this accident that may help people understand what went so wrong here?
Well, before I get to your question, Chris, I want to express my deep appreciation and thanks for the crew on board the plane. Our Endeavor crew performed heroically, but also as expected. This is what we train for. We train for this continuously. The fact that they were able to evacuate that plane as expeditiously as they did under extreme conditions, coupled with the fact that all 80 people walked off the plane with limited physical injuries, was really a testament to the safety that's embedded in the systems. I want to thank the first responders, the medical team, the care teams on board the Toronto Airport, everyone, and the design of the aircraft itself worked as expected. I can't provide any details, Chris. It's an ongoing investigation, as you are aware. Other than, you know, we've all seen the media, we've all seen the videos. That's about as much detail as we can look at and talk about at this moment.
Ed, you know, I've gotten a lot of questions from people about the pilots here. Can you tell us how experienced these pilots were? Would they have been familiar with that airport, particularly the conditions in the winter in Toronto?
Absolutely. It was an experienced crew. There's one level of safety at Delta, Chris, between our mainline and our regional jets. All these pilots train for these conditions. They fly under all kinds of conditions at all the airports in which we operate. So, no, there's nothing specific with respect to experience that I'd look to.
And I was thinking, too, all the passengers that we've talked to are giving big kudos to your crew, so I'm glad you gave them a shout-out. The flight attendants, they said, remain calm under all the circumstances. But I just can't stop looking at this video. I'm sure you are, too. And I'm wondering, when you first saw it, number one, Ed, I didn't even know a plane could flip over like that, number one. Number two, it says Delta Airlines. What went through your mind when you saw that picture? And I'm sure you've looked at this video many, many times. I'm a very nervous flyer, as you know, and I'm just so freaked out by this. So when you saw this, what did you think?
Well, it's horrifying. When you look at the video, you can imagine, you know, when I received the text minutes after it happened, hearing that there was a regional jet upside down on the on an active runway with 80 people on board, how I felt without knowing yet what was transpiring. But the reality is that safety is embedded into our system. Air travel in the United States is the safest form of transportation and travel there is, period. And it's because we train for events like this. And yes, it's amazing the work that our team did up at Endeavor, but that's what we expect out of them because we are prepared for all types of circumstances.
You know, the Trump administration recently fired many employees of the FAA administration. Do those cuts worry you? And do you think that impacts the safety? I know you just said it's the safest way to travel, but after looking at all these mishaps, a lot of people are very nervous. Do these cuts affect you?
The cuts do not affect us, Gail. I've been in close communication with the Secretary of Transportation. I understand that the cuts at this time are something that are raising questions, but the reality is there's over 50,000 people that work at the FAA, and the cuts, I understand, were 300 people, and they were in non-critical safety functions. The Trump administration has committed to investing deeply in terms of improving the overall technologies that are used in the air traffic control systems and modernizing the skies. They've committed to hiring additional controllers and investigators and safety investigators. So, no, I'm not concerned with that at all.
Ed, the administration has also called on Elon Musk to modernize air traffic control. From an airline standpoint, what needs to be done to make the system better? And a quick follow, if I can, what do you say to the people who are nervous getting on airplanes right now?
Well, to the public, I can understand the concerns at the moment. The reality is it's safer than the car ride I took this morning to get to my office. It is the safest form of transportation, period. And it's safe because in our industry, we all focus on safety. But we're a very competitive industry across the U.S. airlines. There's one thing we do not compete on, and that's safety. We all work together. We learn from each other. Every single incident that happens, whether it's reported or not, gets reported back to our teams that we share across the industry. So we learn from each other, and this incident, as terrible as it appears, was something that we'll learn from that'll make us better.
Yeah, we can't wait to hear the answers. What happened? I know you want to know that too, Ed Bastian, but kudos to the Delta crew and your team that everybody survived this. Thank you very much for your time. We know you're busy, very busy today. Thanks a lot.
That's Gail King, and that's CBS This Morning. And that's the CEO of Delta Airlines, Ed Bastian. And they tried to make it sound like it was Trump's fault because he got rid of some FAA employees. And Bastian came back and said, no, it had nothing to do with that. As a matter of fact, he said they have 50,000 employees in the FAA, and all of the 300 that were dismissed were in non-critical positions. They had nothing to do with the safety of transportation. He said, as a matter of fact, the Trump administration, which is dedicated to improving the skies, has committed to redesigning the system so it's actually a safer system in the next few years. So, I was surprised that he so quickly came back, but I was also pleased that he was honest about that. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, they're still working out. And by the way, folks, it's going to take some time before they have a final answer as to what happened with that crash. It could be anything. See where Mike Pence, by the way, he came out.
Oh, and he can't help but sit there and do anything he can to throw something at Trump.
I think, honestly, Bill, I think he thinks in his deluded mind, I think he thinks that he has a shot at 2028. I think that I have a better chance at 2028 than Mike Pence. He will never live down the turncoat image that he created when he promised the supporters of President Trump that he would stand by them at a rally, and then 3 days later, he turned his back. He went 180 degrees and did exactly what he said he wouldn't do. So, and now he's surprised that the right has turned away from him. No, he said that he scolded what he did, folks. Yesterday, he scolded President Trump for calling out Zelensky as a dictator. Now, all I can tell you is this:
okay, you got a guy that is no longer elected; his term has run out.
Right.
There are, by what authority is he still there?
Military.
Why can't they do it?
Martial law.
Authority.
Yeah.
So it behooves him to keep the war going.
Oh, sure. Not only that, but he also, he literally closed down the state church, Ukrainian Orthodox Church. He literally closed all the churches down.
And why was that?
Well, because they had an influence on the people. They might mm-hmm. tell the truth. And they also arrested a lot of priests and bishops. This is not the actions of a normal democracy. This is the action of a dictator. Trump is not wrong.
No,
so,
he's not. You know, and speaking of, the left is so adamant about, our democracy, our Constitution. It's not our, it's the Constitution. Democracy, because it's for everybody.
Right.
But the way that they're saying it, they're acting like it's theirs, theirs and theirs alone. You know, I saw, and I can't verify what party the judge is in, but I can only imagine there was a story, I guess, that was coming out in a Mississippi paper that was challenging the city council on some issues that they were talking about. And a judge ordered the newspaper to pull the story, which everybody is always all over Mississippi up and ends about. And I'm like going, okay, this is a lady that had a chemical background, an engineering background at an institute, not really a state college or university. But either way, she's got a degree in that, you know, in that kind of science.
But a judge ordered the newspaper to pull a story.
Mm-hmm. An editorial. Yeah. It's I think her name is Crystal Wise Martin. Her mother was a judge down there for 30 years and then retired. And so she filled her mother's shoes. So she didn't win the election because of her gravitas that she was so smart and everything. It was based on the background of her mother. And that, now the interesting thing is, I said, well, you know, is she Republican or is she Democrat? That would be important to know, because bad news can happen on both sides of the fence. But it's been scrubbed, and I'm going like, okay, you know, the paper is the Democratic and this and that, this and that. So I'm like going, yeah, she's probably a Democrat. Yeah. I'll probably get kicked in the rear end for saying that, but the simple fact is...
I think we're about to see, you know, all these judges are trying to challenge Trump on everything he does. Literally everything he does. He signs an executive order, and some little dweeb judge in Rhode Island or California or someplace sticks his hand up and says, no, you can't do that because I say you can't. And I think that they intentionally, I mean, the administration, I think they expected this to happen. And I think they wanted to go to the Supreme Court. And I think in the not too distant future, you're going to see some kind of a ruling from the Supreme Court that is going to be a one-size-fits-all ruling, saying that there's a certain limitation to these judges. You can only go so far. You are unelected by the people. You are little dweebs in your little corner of the world who have, you haven't gotten 77 million people saying, we want him. No, we don't even know who you are. And yet you have the ability to raise your hand and stop our government? No.
The problem that I have is that, you know, it might be wishful thinking, because a judge taking down a judge, you know, or because there's a certain feeling of power when they're in there. I'm a judge.
Well, you're right. A judge taking down a judge, but the Supreme Court, the way the system is right now, the final arbiter is those nine judges. You know?
And if they rule in favor of judges, then we do have a constitutional crisis.
Yes.
We do have a democracy crisis, because that means it doesn't matter who you vote for. Has nothing to do with it. But if this judge gets appointed or you elect this person, you have given them ultimate power and authority, and they may not know a damn thing about the Constitution or about democracy, or they may not even be for any of it at all, but they have the power to change law and rule the land. So it is going to be interesting to see how the Supreme Court rules. And even though we have the majority,
there are two things happening right now which haven't been done before, I think, in the history of our country, is that two congressmen have filed impeachment proceedings against two of these judges who have stuck their nose into President Trump's business. And I guess in the history of judiciary, there's never been an impeached judge like district judges. It would be a first if someone gets impeached. But, you know, this is an era of firsts. We've never seen the lawfare that went against a former president like we saw over the past couple of years. So that was a first. So there are a lot of firsts happening. It wouldn't surprise me, Bill, if they start to impeach some of these judges, and that slows down their enthusiasm to stick their nose in our business. Anyway, I was just looking at the clock on the wall. You know, I should remind people you can get our coffee. It's on our website, rightsideshop.com. It's a great cup of coffee. It's called Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. That's the whole name, Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee, not to be confused with any other kind of coffee name. Jim and Bill's, you got to put that in there, Right Side Coffee. It's a medium blend roast and a medium decaf roast. Also, we have MAPA available now, Make America Percolate Again, another brand of coffee. You should take a little bit of your time, go to our website, see whether there's something you might want, buy a package, try it yourself, or give it to one of your liberal friends and watch them gag as you tell them where you got it. Let them sip it first and then tell them where you got it. That's Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. Also, we have the only coffee that actually uses Juan Jose and the Border Crosses, that international band to sing the jingle.
Wake up on the right side with Right Side Coffee.
Right Side Coffee. Okay, anything else you want to add, my friend? I was just looking at the clock on the wall, and
given that it's, what is today, Thursday?
Today is Thursday, yeah. And I guess Cash Patel's up today, isn't he?
Yeah, I was just going to say, that was my next thing out of my mouth, is that, yeah, today the vote is on for him. And I think that'll go well. There's some votes next week, but we're getting to the point to where Trump is getting in his most important people.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Trump's popularity is growing.
I know.
And this is unprecedented. And
it worries me, Bill. It worries me. I worry for his safety. Every time I see him in a public appearance, I cringe. And he doesn't hide. He doesn't run to Delaware and hang around the beach.
What would happen if they did take him out? What would happen? What would the people do? Would we go back home and say, well, that was a nice run, and
I think a lot of us feel good about J.D. Vance. Mm-hmm. We wondered about whether he'd be a good choice, and I think Trump picked a great. I also think that Marco Rubio has shown himself to be a real positive guy on our side.
Well, I think
there's
a bullpen of people out there in his picks that he's got out there that they could all potentially, be runners there, which keeps Vance on his toes.
And they're also young. All of them are young guys. So, young guys. He has. Tulsi Gabbard, she's in her position right now as director of national intelligence. So much going on, and like you said, the heavy guns will be in place when Cash Patel is the director of the FBI. Then all the people will be the players. There'll be some other people confirmed, but they'll be like. Director of National Bus Terminal or something like that, but
well, one of the weirdest things that I heard from somebody, and they were from the left. They sat there and said, "Well, Cash Patel, I don't know that I can trust him because he's Indian."
Oh my God, talk about a racist! But that's coming from the party of diversity and equity and inclusion, the party that believes that everybody should have a chance. God.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, look, judge somebody by their actions.
By the way, Cash Patel is an American. By the way, I should point that out to anybody who's listening. He's an American. He's one of us, folks. And if anything, he's maybe even more of an American than a lot of people who think they're American.
Yeah, no, you got to judge by their actions and whatnot. But, people do left, right, whatever. They make visual judgments. Now, sometimes they're warranted. Like the lady, I forget her name, that's in the movie Wicked, that she's going to play.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Jesus Christ, and she's shaved bald. She's a woman of color. Yeah. Kind of an odd-looking
earrings
head.
Earrings through every orifice, yes.
Yeah, she's got nose rings, earrings. Are they coming out? Because otherwise, I don't have a problem with somebody, when you're acting, you're role-playing. Now, Hollywood used to say, we have to have authenticity. You have to have a person that is the right race and looks the part and everything.
Oh, I know, yeah.
It's true. Now, at a kid's play, I don't care that a little girl plays Santa Claus. I think they all should get to play Santa Claus. Every kid, every race, every color, even in a wheelchair. Because You know, it's fantasy time, and we all know that. You know, and movies are a bit of a fantasy too. But this, you know, they're saying they're depicting their interpretation. That is a big stretch. I don't know. The piercings go back a long time.
Well, Jesus Christ, I hate to say it, but Jesus Christ historically was a male. You know,
historically, yes. Yeah,
I just
Jim, where's your science? Where's the science?
Well, all I can do is point to historical records, and they all indicate that he and his apostles, all guys, fishermen, they hung around the beach with their boats, you know. They went out. Remember, he walked on
next,
water.
Next, you're going to tell me there's only two genders, male and female.
I know. I hate to. Hate to
Where's the science behind that?
I didn't want to pop your bubble, but yeah, I believe there are only two. But that's just me. I'm an old guy, you know. Hey, listen, it's going to be an interesting week. We're going to have lots more to come. And we only have one more day, really, tomorrow. But this every day seems to be busy. Every day. And with that, my friend, I think I've just about done it here. I think we can put a fork in this thing. And
you've done it all right. There's only one thing left to do, and you know what that is?
What's that?
Well, I got to take a sip of Right Side Coffee first. And
okay.
By the way, folks, you need to get some of this stuff. It's good stuff because it makes you say with you know, lots of fervor in your voice, "Hasta la vista, baby. We're out of here."
This is CRN America.